Well, let's take our Bibles as we continue our study of 1 Timothy and turn to the first chapter, and we'll be looking at verses 3 and 4 tonight. And let me begin by saying false teachers and their damning doctrines have always been a tool of Satan to deceive and to destroy. And certainly he used this tactic way back in the Garden of Eden when he said to Eve, "You shall not surely die. You won't die. If you partake of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you'll just be like God, knowing good and evil." Scripture is full of reminders of the dangers these heretics pose. And let me have you begin by looking at Matthew chapter 7, where we read in verse 15, keeping in mind this is the Sermon on the Mount, "Beware of false prophets, which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves. Ye shall know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes of thorns or figs or thistles? Even so every good tree bringeth forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree bringeth forth evil fruit. A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit, neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. Every tree that bringeth not forth good fruit is hewn down and cast into the fire. Wherefore, by their fruits ye shall know them." And then in Matthew chapter 24, the Olivet Discourse, Christ said in this in verse 11 and verse 24, "And many false prophets shall arise and shall deceive many. For there shall arise false Christs and false prophets, and shall show great signs and wonders, insomuch that if it were possible, they should deceive the very elect." And thereafter, New Testament writers echoed the Lord's warning regarding false teachers. If you'll turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 11, let me read beginning with verse 13. "For such are false prophets, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into the apostles of Christ. And no marvel, for Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light. Therefore it is no great thing if his ministers also be transformed as the ministers of righteousness, whose end shall be according to their works." And then in 2 Peter chapter 2, beginning with verse 1, "But there were false prophets also among you, even as there shall be false teachers among you, who privily shall bring in damnable heresies, even denying the Lord that bought them, and bring upon themselves swift destruction. And many shall follow their pernicious ways, by reason of whom the way of truth shall be evil spoken of. And through covetousness so shall they with feigned words make merchandise of you." And then listen to what John has to say in 1 John chapter 4. Again, beginning with verse 1, "Beloved, believe not every spirit, but try the spirits, whether they are of God, because many false prophets are gone out into this world. Hereby know ye the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesseth that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh is of God. And every spirit that confesseth not that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh is not of God. And this is that spirit of Antichrist whereof ye have heard that it should come, and even now already is it in the world." And so there's just numbers of verses that tell us there are and there will be false prophets. Friends, if Christ said it, it would be true. But not only did he say it, but then we have authors like Paul and Peter and John who said it as well. There are, there will be Antichrist, false prophets. There are false prophets amongst us today. Well, despite its rich history of a church that had labored and had not fainted, these believers at Ephesus were not exempt from the evil effects of these false teachers. Just as Paul had predicted in Acts chapter 20, verses 29 and 30, "For I know this, that after my departure shall grievous wolves enter in among you, not sparing the flock. Also of your own selves shall men arise, speaking perverse things to draw away disciples after them." We have before us a letter that Paul wrote to Timothy to tell him to make every effort to impede and to arrest the influence of these false teachers, and then to make things right in the Ephesian church. We have the apostle's initial charge to his son in the faith, beginning with verse 3. Now this evening, I want us to look at just two verses, verse 3 and verse 4, where we have our points tonight. Point number one is Paul's advice to Timothy to remain in Ephesus. And then point number two, Paul's instruction to Timothy regarding false teachers. Now in verse 3, we have our first point, which is Paul's advice to Timothy to remain at Ephesus. "As I besought thee to abide still at Ephesus when I went into Macedonia." Now the Greek word for besought means to urge, to stay, to entreat, to beg, to implore. Paul here is pleading with Timothy to stay on at Ephesus while he goes on to the churches in Macedonia. And most likely Paul, if we can kind of set the table here, had begun the confrontation and the expulsion of these false teachers. And we're talking about Hymenaeus and Alexander and their disciples. We see them mentioned in verse 20 of this chapter. But he is now urging Timothy to stay, to remain in Ephesus, to remain as pastor of this church, so that he could carry through the completion of removing these false teachers. Paul's request shows the urgency of the situation posed by these false teachers and their doctrines. Why do you think, and maybe it's real obvious to you, but maybe it might not be so obvious to others, why would Paul be so consumed with making sure that these false teachers were removed from the church at Ephesus? Well, doesn't false doctrine lead to a false way of salvation? And if you don't know the right way of salvation, you're going to end up in hell. And so it really does matter that we eradicate false teaching from our midst. Well, we come now to point number two, and that's Paul's instruction to Timothy on how to make this happen, how to remove, what should be his focus on how to stand against these false teachers and their doctrine. So Paul certainly had experience in this matter, but now he's instructing Timothy on what he needs to do. And so verse 3, he says that thou mightest charge some that they teach no other doctrine. So he begins by confronting them, charging them, saying, I charge you to not teach this doctrine. Now the word, the Greek word for charge, doesn't simply mean to suggest, or it's not saying, well, give it some thought. You know, I want you to go home and pray about it. That's not the point here. It's rather a command. Paul is saying to Timothy, demand that these teachers cease and desist their erroneous teaching. Now, most likely, these men were not outsiders. Of course, we've already mentioned a couple of them. but were elders and teachers in the Ephesian church and other surrounding churches, which made them even more dangerous and obviously harder to remove. They were entrenched in the ministry, and they probably had a following. Now, specifically, what was Timothy to command that these false teachers stop doing? Well, they were to refrain. They were to cease teaching strange doctrines. What was their error? Well, verse 4 tells us, neither give heed to fables and endless genealogies. No, they weren't into Ancestry.com. We're not talking about that. But they were talking about, they were teaching about legends and imaginative stories and myths and doctrines of demons and pedigrees of the patriarchs and family trees. And I asked, what happened to preach the word? And 1 Timothy 4:3 describes further some of their heresies, forbidding to marry and commanding to abstain from meats which God hath created to be received with thanksgiving of them which believe and know the truth. And what do we have here? We have false asceticism, a legalistic attention to self deprivation. Their teaching was nothing but worldly and empty talk, which led to further ungodliness, additional errors, endless questions, speculations, and the destruction of its hearers. Rather than godly edifying, which is in faith so do, which we see at the end of verse 4, Paul is telling Timothy that these false teachers, their heresy was an attack on the very gospel of saving faith, which tells us, like all other false religions, it was a legalistic system of works righteousness. Now, isn't it true that if you look at all the religions of the world, talking about everything but Christianity, but if you look at all the isms and the sects of the world, they all are, in essence, have the same thing in common. And they are man's attempt to gain salvation by his own efforts, good deeds, ceremonies, rituals. Again, to gain heaven through human achievement. But our own efforts cannot save. We cannot earn our way to heaven. Salvation doesn't come through our works. And the reason is our works don't get us to heaven because they cannot atone for our sin. Only the blood of Christ washes away our sin. Only then can we stand accepted in the beloved. Only then can we gain entrance into heaven because Christ took the judgment of our sin through his death on the cross, and therefore he takes our sin, pays its judgment, and in turn gives us his righteousness. And that doesn't happen through our own effort, the works of righteousness. Again, when we quote these verses so often, we are saved by grace through what? Faith. It's not of ourselves. It's a gift of God. It's not of what? Works, lest any man should boast. And then there's that verse in Titus 3:5, not by works of righteousness. I mean, it says it right there. Which we have done, but according to his mercy, he has saved us. And so, since what these false teachers were teaching and what we have them teaching today is so eternally destructive, meaning the end thereof are the ways of death, false teachers are not to be taken lightly. They are not to be ignored. And Paul did not ignore them. And he said to Timothy, you can't ignore them either. Remember what Paul wrote to the church at Galatia, chapter 1, verses 8 and 9. But though we or an angel from heaven preach any other gospel unto you than that which we have preached unto you, let him be accursed. And then he says it again, if, as we said before, so say I now again, if any man preach any other gospel unto you than that ye have received, let him be accursed. Friends, to believe wrongly about the gospel is to be forever lost. How many millions and millions and millions of people are going to be in hell because some false prophet, some false teacher told them, you can get to heaven through your own effort. Eternally lost. And anyone who peddles such a false theology is to be exposed, rebuked, and forsaken. Say, well, I don't like that. I think that's not showing Jesus' love. Well, is Jesus' love telling people that you can get to heaven through your own effort? And then you die and go to hell? Is that Jesus' love? I don't think so. The ways of the false prophets, false teachers, are on the broad road that leads to eternal destruction. So no wonder Paul said to Timothy, again, verse 3 and 4, As I besought thee to abide still at Ephesus, when I went into Macedonia, that thou mightest charge some that they teach no other doctrine, neither give heed to fables and endless genealogies, which minister questions rather than godly edifying, of which is in faith or by faith, so do. You know, let me just say, the truth of God, the gospel of Jesus Christ, is very simplistically clear. I don't see that generating questions. I mean, it's clear. We are saved by grace through faith.